I'm not quite sure what I've done, Mr. Brown, but forgive me. You're the one enemy I don't need. Members, you will see that there are lots of documents. But first things first, I want to just introduce you all to my new secretary in my office. She's the lady there, the pretty lady there. Her name is Tanya Kleinhans. Tanya, you must just give everybody your contact details. What I suggest you do is be in touch with Mr. Brown, get all of the members' email details, and then email to all the members your full details. I trust that all members do get emails. Yes, Mr. Ganyach is just smiling at me. I know you like me. I also like you. The problem is, you know, I can still be your enemy, but I can't be the committee secretary's enemy. It just doesn't work out too well. Okay, so I take it that that would be suitable to everybody. I also have said to just see what details Mr. Brown has got of members, both when we are in Parliament and when we at recess, right? And if that's insufficient, just get those details from individual members. The second thing that I wanted to just talk to you about before we dive into our agenda today is, and let's all just switch off those cell phones. Give me one of those, these here. Okay. You would see these little goodies here. Okay. What this is a very special initiative. What this organization does is it works with children who are homeless. And they try and hone in on the talents of these youngsters. Some of them are currently in Rome, or is it? No, it's in Milan in Italy. Playing soccer after having been coached by world-class coaches, and they're playing in what is called the Homeless World Cup Soccer Tournament out in Milan at the moment. They also try and hone in on other talents. One of the people who is in this program was a semi-finalist in the Rigged Idols show that you would have, some of you would have followed. And in this instance, what they've done is they've taken some youngsters who've shown a talent for cooking, and they have trained them with some of the best chefs in the world. And what you're going to experience at this dinner is these youngsters having had this extensive training. I believe this particular fellow was trained by Jamie Oliver. He's going to be cooking a five-course dinner or something of that sort. And it's really to raise more funds for this organization so they can perpetuate the good work that they do in our country. So if you can, on that date, the 1st of October, please do support this very, very worthy cause. From time to time, I will send you guys their activities and so on. Okay. Then we have, what else was I supposed to announce, Mr. Brown? That's it, eh? Oh, the files. Files, people. Big boxes like this have arrived with files for you, all of you. And Mr. Brown says he can't see his desk anymore. So he didn't bring them along today, but they are going to be delivered to your offices. Am I right? To the offices, not their pigeonholes, right? It won't fit. Okay. To members' offices today, okay? But the other documents Mr. Brown has brought, which you will see in this little envelope thingy that he gave you, which is all of these nice-looking things here. One that's called Quarterly Assessment Activities for Literacy and Numeracy. Next one is Assessment Framework Intermediate Phase and Assessment Framework Foundation Phase. So you've got three of these books, right? You've only got two. That's not good. You're meant to have three. So you like some of the schools. Okay. Let me welcome the department, Ms. Carlson, Ms. Rebecca. Welcome to you. And anybody else from the department? Just the two of you, right? And, of course, Mr. Pananiefer is here. There's three. What? Oh, I didn't sign it. Just make sure, Mr. Brown, that Ms. Kobai also gets her documents. Okay, over to you, two ladies, to just firstly tell us what documents we all have here. These ones.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation. Apologies for on behalf of the Director General. He was unfortunately unable to come to join us. Chair, what you have are documents that we will be speaking to. What you should be having in front of you is the three documents that you've spoken about. You will also have copies of letters that we sent out to schools when we sent the documents out. And you will also have, or you should have, a report on systemic evaluation, the latest report on systemic evaluation in grade 3 for 2007. Those are the documents that should be in front of you. I will, however, talk you through the documents and how they fit in. Chair, again, just to thank you for the invitation. Our briefing today is on... Can I go on, Chair? Okay. There might be also a gazette, the gazette that for the Foundations for Learning.
Okay, sorry about that. That's just a different document that we've got. Okay, you've got the Government Gazette.
The first one, and Chair, perhaps I should apologize. There must be also a copy of the presentation that I am making. The many documents that you received are documents that we had promised you when you visited the department, and apparently there was a delay in sending them through to you. But they are not necessary. They all speak to the campaign, but it's much easier if you look at them at your own leisure, but I will refer to all of them. Chairperson, the Foundations for Learning, just a bit of a background. It was really a response to what the system perceived as unacceptably low levels of literacy and numeracy and I've said mainly at the GET level, because many of our international assessments and our own systemic evaluation, they focus on the general education and training band, and therefore that's what we were responding to. What the minister did, because we, from 2001, the system has done systemic evaluations at grade 3 and at grade 6 every 3 years, just to assess the performance of the system. And because of a realization that the interventions that we're putting in place didn't necessarily bring about the kind of improvement that we believed was necessary, the minister then launched the campaign, the Foundations for Learning campaign, and it was launched last year in March. And primarily it was launched as a call to everybody, not just to teachers, to schools and communities, to work together to focus on reading, writing, and calculating. And it was a call for commitment to all of us to teaching and learning the art and skill of reading, writing, and calculating. The Foundations for Learning is not meant for a particular group of schools. The focus is on all schools. Because one of the things that we have established is that even our most, our schools that are well-resourced, there is a challenge across South Africa in numeracy and literacy. And therefore, the focus is all schools in the country. Secondly, the main anchor of the campaign is providing clear directives and expectations for quality education at primary level. And this is to every teacher, every principal, and every manager in the system. It's not meant, it's based on the national curriculum statement. It doesn't add new requirements, but what it does is to say, what is it that you should be doing as a manager, as a teacher, as a principal in the classroom to improve literacy and numeracy? And therefore, it focuses mainly on key activities that lead to good literacy and numeracy. And that's what we've captured in the Gazette. What is it that you're supposed to be doing every day to actually improve literacy and numeracy? We also put in place a target that all of us are working towards. By 2011, no school on average should be obtaining less than 50% in external assessments. We provide through the Gazette, as I've said, very clear directives about what you should be doing, also what the basic resources for effective teaching are. We costed these as well, and what the expected teacher performance should be, as well as the assessment. Chair, just to say, one of the things also in the assessment that we've discovered is that, in fact, many teachers in their own classroom assessment, in their own school-based assessment, do not assess on all the skills that you want your children to be assessed on. And therefore, we give guidance now on the kind of assessment that we expect in school as well, hoping that it will influence the teaching. Just to look at what it is that we're doing in relation to dealing with what we see as the current state of performance in these two areas. Firstly, we've increased through very credible assessment processes, we've increased our monitoring of performance in schools. And what we do is to look not only at the level of performance, but to also look at what children are able to do and what they are not able to do. And our feedback, therefore, to schools is based on what it is that children should be doing and are not able to do, and how to do it. We, however, also measure this performance against contextual issues, because, as you would all know, normally teachers will say, but how can we achieve these results that you want us to achieve when, in fact, we don't have A, B, C, or D? And therefore, we look at where the children come from and look at how they are doing. And it helps because we are able to see schools that are in the same environments performing differently. And therefore, you are able to say, there is something else that you may want to be looking at. It may not only because the children come from a poor environment, you know, that they're performing like this, because we do have, you know, incidents of real good practice, even in the poorest environments. What we then put at the center, this is, I think also I must indicate that although we're looking at literacy and numeracy, we're seeing literacy and numeracy as indicators of broad quality of performance, and therefore they are used as the key areas, but it's to address levels of poor performance overall in the system. What we have at the moment, I have a graph there that shows you the available evidence that we're working on. We started these systemic evaluations in 2001, and as you can see, average performance in 2001 was around 30% in both literacy and numeracy, and that was in grade 3. In 2007, when we assessed the children, we assessed in 2001, and 2004 we did grade 6, and 2007 we did grade 3 again. There was some improvement in grade 3, and I think, Chair, I must hasten to say, some people have seen this almost, they've likened it to metric. It's not metric. In metric, because every child takes the exam, we look at percentage pass. Here, it's the level of performance, and therefore, it is the average performance, because we also don't test every child. We sample, but we do a stratified sample. So there was 5 and 6% improvement when we measured performance in 2007. Still unacceptably low in our view, which is why we set the 50% target and looked at how to work towards that. Chair, we also, what we do is to look at performance at four different levels. Your level 4 is the highest, which is between 70% and 100%. Levels 1 and 2 are from 0 to 49%. So your 50% would be from level 3 to 4. And we've looked at where the majority of our children are. And as you can see, the majority of our children are at those two levels. They are below 50%. But at the moment, we have over 40% of our children performing at 50% and above. I'm not sure if I'm going the right direction. No, I'm going backwards. That was grade 3, Chair. This is grade 6. Now, if you look at grade 6, you will see that although the graph mirrors what we saw in grade 3, it is worse at grade 6 level. The majority of our children are at levels 1 and some at level 2, but there are very few of them who are at level 4, whether you're looking at mathematics or looking at languages. Very few of them are achieving at that high level, which is a matter of concern. So if you look at what we're seeing there, what we're finding is that, as I've said, we had 36 and 35% in numeracy at grade 3 in 2007, and an improvement of between 5 and 6% on the 2001 performance. At grade 6, we had 38% in language, but very dismal performance in mathematics at 27% in 2004. What we've also done, Chair, and that is why for me it was important to say the Foundations for Learning campaign focuses on all schools. We do have in the system a program called Kids Up, which focuses on schools serving your poorest communities. And there we have been prioritizing those schools in terms of giving them resources and also monitoring whether those resources are translating into improved learning. And what we're seeing is that when you have targeted focus and you provide all the basic learning and teaching resources, regular assessment and support to teachers, there is an improvement. And we've seen an improvement in those schools that we've prioritized. Chair, what we also do is to look at performance in the different provinces so that we can assist also not only your poorer schools, but also give more support to those provinces that seem to need the support more. As you can see there, if you look at, for instance, language, you will see that Eastern Cape, Limpopo, that's the red line, Eastern Cape and Limpopo are your poorest performers. Whereas if you look at Gauteng, your Northern Cape and Western Cape, those provinces do reasonably well. I want to hasten, Chair, to say, because this has come up before, sometimes it is as a result of good practice in those provinces, but also the historical issues play a factor. Those provinces that seem to be doing worse than others tend to be those provinces that are the biggest, that have your biggest rural population, that inherited vast numbers of former homeland schools and all of that. So there is also a lot of history that you find in the performance, the distribution. But even so, your lowest performance is in the largest, and I want to say previously disadvantaged provinces, Eastern Cape and Limpopo. However, what I'd said before is very true, that even in those provinces, you find really good practice. You find schools that outperform their conditions. So despite the conditions in which they are, you find that, in fact, they're doing extremely well. Chair, what we've also done, which I did say, when we analyze the results, we then look at what children are able to do and what they're not able to do. But also we look at what seem to be key predictors of achievement. And teacher practice accounts for almost 59% of the difference in performance. The language of learning and teaching, so where children are learning in a language that they don't speak at home at all, or that is almost foreign to them, they perform worse than those that are learning in a language that is theirs. School resources also play a major part. I know many people say resources are not everything. They are not everything, but they play a major role. Access to learning materials, the school resources, the first one, is basically your overall environment, but also the learning and teaching resources make a difference, as well as time on task, whether teachers, when they're at school, spend the time teaching. And those are the highest. Those are the things that we've seen make a lot of difference. In the Foundations for Learning campaign, therefore, Chair, what we try to do, the packaging of all of the things that we've put in place is meant to address those key predictors. Firstly, we provide content, structure, and creative teaching tips around properly sequenced and paced content for teachers, so that we assist them with effective and relevant teaching practice in the classroom. We have found through the evaluations that, in fact, most teachers are not willfully not teaching, but they don't know exactly what to do. And therefore, they don't spend sufficient time doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. And therefore, we provide them with that. We provide with assessment activities covering the entire curriculum and assessing the different skills that we expect them to assess. Again, if you look at what our international assessments show, you will find that, in fact, it's not so much that the children cannot read or write, but they cannot do things at the higher level skills. I mean, they don't demonstrate those skills because they are never taught them in the classroom or never assessed at that level. And therefore, you come in from outside assessing when, in fact, teachers have never taught those skills. They are able to do what they've been taught, but not more. We also provide work that will ensure maximum time on task. So we divide up your day to say, this is what you do, this is what you do, which forces the teachers to actually spend the time doing the things that they're supposed to be doing, and provide the critical resources for effective teaching. And most of it is really meant to provide support for underprepared teachers in all grades. This is a question that I was asked before. What I mean by underprepared, I don't mean teachers who don't go to class with lesson plans. I mean teachers who have been underinvested in, not properly developed, and therefore who don't know exactly what they should be doing. The key strategies and documents that we've used then, Chair, the first one is the Gazette, which you have. The Gazette spells out very clearly expectations in respect of daily teaching activities, your assessments, and the basic resources you need for effective teaching. Now, the basic resources, that speaks not only to the school, it speaks to your district advisor, it speaks to the principal, because some of the schools can order their own resources, and we're saying, here is what you need minimally. Before you even go and get additional things, these are the things you need. But it also enables schools to put pressure on their district or on their province if the supply comes from outside, because then you know exactly what you should be having. And then what we have also, Chair, is what we call your assessment frameworks. We've got assessment frameworks for both the foundation phase and your your intermediate phase. What these are basically milestones. They are milestones to say what should a child in grade 3, in term 3, be able to do and know. And that's what you assess them on. So we've got them from grade 1 to grade 6. So every teacher should know that my child, if they're it's the last term of the year, they should be able to do these things and assess accordingly. But over and above that, we give what we call quarterly assessment activities. Now, these are really for teachers to draw from so that they can assess the entire curriculum and assess the appropriate competencies so that we don't have this disjuncture that I was talking about of children not being assessed on all of the skills and competencies that we require. Now, almost everything that we've done has really been in response to what we found out, but also in response to what teachers have asked for. Teachers then said to us they want lesson plans. Those are the files that you see there. We develop the lesson plans. It's not really spoon feeding necessarily. I've said it. We're also responding to those teachers who are under invested in. And therefore, we give the lesson plans. We give weekly lesson plans. Teachers can use them or not use them if they feel they know what needs to be done. What we want to hold them accountable to is the 50% target in 2011. And we're saying if you think you can do it, because now we monitor every year and talk to that, but if you're doing it, then if you say you don't need our lesson plans, then show us that, in fact, you're capable of developing the skills that we want in our children. The last one is a partnership that we have with the Sunday Times, which is using the read-write supplements. What we do there is to provide tips, because we believe that the improvement of literacy and numeracy will not only be about the school. It has to be about the parents as well. And these are useful tips for parents and teachers in the promotion of literacy and numeracy. Chair, what we then do, I think I haven't, oh, I do talk about it. What we realized that when we started, for one or other reason, which was very strange, we started in grade 1 and we didn't start with grade R. So what we've done now, we've developed what we call a Foundations for Learning Grade R toolkit. This one, it looks at, it's the same thing, your milestones, what a teacher would do, but that one has all the resources from your charts, and games, all of the resources that a grade R teacher needs in a year for effective teaching. That's going out in November. The lesson plans, what we had done last year was to send mainly, because we had serious shortages of finances, we'd send CDs and we'd send hard copies to your poorest. Now we've developed for grades 1 to 6 for 60% of our schools. The others will have your CDs still. And all of these, for all four terms, will be sent. These will be out also by November 2009 to all our schools. What we also did starting last year, Chair, was to set standardized assessments for our schools. So every school now, grade 1 to 6 learners, write an externally set exam in literacy and numeracy, grade 1 to 6, once at the end of the year. Now, we don't use this. The only ones that we analyze are your grades 3 and 6 to look at the performance of the system. But this is just to say to teachers, here's how the national performance is, because we just sample to look at the performance. But each teacher will know, you know, how their own children are doing, and therefore be able to look at it, set their own improvement targets. We'll continue this year. Last year, we only had 70% of the schools writing. We started late. We're hoping that this year every school will write, because it is a very important exam to write. And in fact, this year we're using it for promotion and progression purposes. We're also having a program to look at districts, because this is a program that we're saying should not be pointing fingers at schools. There is no support from districts, there's no support from provinces, and therefore we have a workshop with districts planned for October to say, what is it that you should be doing? Here's the program. How do you support schools? How do you monitor that, in fact, they are doing what they should be doing? Chair, it is one program where, because we made our contact details available, one program where we've had real feedback from schools. And most of it has been extremely positive. They've asked for more, which is why we've intensified our support. But they've also looked at certain things that they think we can improve. And therefore, what we're doing now is to strengthen the milestone document. There has been feedback from many of the schools on that, and that will be on the website at the end of November. And what we hadn't done, which we have had a lot of call for, is to have these milestones in all the official languages. We started in English, and we're working on all the languages, and that is on, and they'll also be on the website at the end of November. And I've already spoken to the workshop on district officials, because what we're doing with district officials is not to talk generally about how to support. We want, together with them, to develop a program of support. How do you... In January, what should you be looking at when you go to schools? We're starting them in November, for instance, when the children write the exams. What do they do? They must make sure that all of the schools write. They must analyze the performance and work with the schools. Beginning of the year, they must make sure every teacher has the documents. So we're looking at the entire year. What do you do at what point in the year? What do you focus on over and above then the other support that they need to give? Chairperson, thank you very much. That's the Foundations for Learning. We've got 2 dates, but they will be, my team are working on it. I know it's the 6th to the 9th, but it's 2 different workshops. We're clustering the provinces. I don't have the detail at the moment. I had said national, but my team advised that we try and cluster and therefore go closer to the provinces.
We would like to be there.
I can inform you of the dates.
And what we will do is we will divide the committee up into the 2 areas so that, you see, it's important for us to know what it is you expect of the district so that when we do our oversight, we have some measurement against which to establish whether the districts are performing well or not. Okay. So please send us that invitation. Mr. Brown, please make note of that. We may have to already now start applying and so on for funding and whatever. Okay, members, clarity first. Let's see if there are any questions for clarity. Mr. Khaniago, then Dr. Kloppers-Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair.
Just clarity, eh?
Yeah, clarity, yeah. Yes. It's not a question, actually, but... It will have an element of a question in it.
But I'm asking you for questions on clarity and then I will open up for discussion later.
Okay. How does this program differ from what was once used in provinces? I don't know whether it was in all provinces, where teachers were doing what we called breakthrough. You remember there was one time a program called Breakthrough, where children would read very fluently. I don't know whether there was something wrong with the Breakthrough or what, but maybe some clarity. It might be that it was not a good program, but to parents, you would be, you know, very happy when your child comes home and he reads fluently. I don't know what happened to that. The second thing is about teachers themselves. It's just an observation. Many learned people read very well in English or maybe in Afrikaans. But when it comes to mother tongue, you'll pardon me if what I'm saying is wrong.
Yeah, but Mr. Khaniok, I'm asking you for questions on clarity on this presentation. I'm going to give you an opportunity to raise all your other questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dr. Kloppers-Lawrence?
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Becker, just one thing for myself. You spoke about, you'd correct me if I didn't capture that very well, But there was something that there were schools which could still perform better despite the bad conditions that they had. Just want to understand if you've been able to evaluate those schools specifically to understand what makes them to be able to, especially those former Bantu stand areas. Thanks.
When you started this program, you say it was in response to unacceptably low levels of literacy and numeracy, right? Now, what did you understand were the problems that led to it at that stage? Because clearly the impact that this makes is on the actual teaching process. That's really what you're targeting. My question is, how did you get to the conclusion that it was the teaching process that was the problem? So that I can understand whether this program, I mean, I look at the 5% sort of up, and I'm wondering to myself whether that is sufficient 3 years on. But that may be because you haven't implemented it, between those two time periods where that measurement occurs. And what I want to really find out is if this is in response to the single problem of what happens in the classroom, whether it's a well-resourced classroom or not, what is the expectation in terms of the improvement? Because I would hate to sit here in 3 years' time and see that there's another 5% improvement. I mean, I would want to see a much bigger leap. Yeah. So the question is really, how well did we assess what the problem was to begin with? And then obviously implement these targeted things. Because you just keep saying, when we do ask you about what led to this, you say, well, it was a response to the low levels of literacy and numeracy. And the question really is, there are many factors that could lead to that. Then the second issue is, I want to know how you monitor. You say you've increased monitoring. How do you do that? Is it by people going into classrooms from the outside in the way that you had in the old days, where you had what we used to call inspectors coming in and then choosing randomly and saying, come and read to me, or come and do this sum, or is it written exams? How does that happen? And then the third issue of clarity is, in what language? So are we testing in English? Are we testing in mother tongue? Is language a factor in how bad these results actually are? And they are bad. I mean, they're really bad. I'm reminded of something somebody said to me. I said the other day, I'm very happy. And then they looked at me and said, this too will pass. So these results, it passes, my happiness passes. So maybe if you want to speak to those issues, and then what we'll do is we'll open up for questions and discussions a little bit more. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, in response to Mr. Kanyafo's question, breakthrough to literacy was the introduction of children to learning in their home language. That's primarily what it was about. But with post 1994, we have found that because all of us as parents have a voice, many parents have said they don't want that. They want we're seeking to disadvantage their children. They want their children taught in English, which has been a major stumbling block for us. So that's the first thing. But secondly, You talk about children being able to read well. One of the reasons why we decided to launch the campaign was that there are some misperceptions about what the National Curriculum Statement says or does not say about the teaching of literacy and numeracy. And therefore, some of the things that are basic good practice in teaching or promoting literacy or reading or counting, most of our advisors and our teachers have almost given a bad name to. And therefore, there's a perception that, in fact, in the curriculum, these are not expected to be done. Let me give you an example. For instance, if your children have to be sharp in mathematics, they have to know these things. For instance, mental mathematics or mental arithmetic is just something that you do as a teacher. But many of us have almost given the impression to teachers that, in fact, that's rote learning, when, in fact, it's not rote learning. And therefore, part of what we're doing through the campaign is to put that right. It's not new. It's taking the curriculum statement and saying, in fact, to promote that, you've got to do these things. And therefore, some of those things, like your mental arithmetic, those things are there, and they've been brought in. The chairperson wants to know whether the issue of home language is a factor. It definitely is a factor. But let me, you know, I'm jumping the gun because Mr. Kanyahu had also raised it. But the issue of home language is a factor. We've been testing the children in the language of learning and teaching. In fact, we set altogether 78 tests last year because we had to set if they're doing, they are being taught in Sepedi, we set in Sepedi, you know, we set in English. So we've been doing it in all the languages. But where your children, and Limpopo is one such province, where there was almost a universal decision to teach from grade one in English. And you can see it. So it's over and above being a rural province. There is that factor of them teaching children who don't hear English anyway in English. And if they say to us the language of learning and teaching is English, we give them a test in English. And the performance is what we see. I talk of school resources. There are two different resources. Firstly, we've seen that where children don't have your basics, like your water and sanitation, they actually do impact on that because they're sitting there miserable. They can't even go and drink water. So there is that part that unless you have those resources as well, it's very difficult for children to perform properly because they don't have the things that are necessary. But there are also critical resources. I use basic and critical, I think, interchangeably. Those that are essential. For instance, if you're looking at a grade one class, for you to teach the alphabet, you do need to have those alphabet phrases. So those are basic. If you're teaching them to read, a grade one teacher is expected to read to children, to read with children, to get the children to read on their own. And those are different. If you're reading to the children, it's more your big books that you have to have. When children are reading on their own, at grade one level, it's more pictures, but it's something that they can read. So it's that kind of basic. We say you cannot teach literacy unless you have that. You cannot teach numeracy unless you've got those number lines and whatever, and children can use those. Those are basic. Otherwise, we don't know how you teach and promote literacy. The lesson plans, indeed, we are providing. There are materials. What we've done is to look at materials. It's learning and teaching. You've looked at materials that you need for teaching. You looked at resources that children need to learn. And therefore, what we've done in packaging the basic resources is to look at your classroom, the teacher, and the learner. What do you need to have in the classroom? Because you've got to immerse your children in the kinds of things that reinforce their learning. So the basic package that we've given to schools speaks to your classroom, to the teacher, and to the learner, because we believe that at that level, it's unlike, for instance, at high school level where you would need a textbook. You can't have a textbook at foundation phase level. You need a package that reinforces the teaching. You need something for the learner. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The school resources, firstly, are in terms of your infrastructure, in terms of the water, in terms of your sanitation. Yes. And then the learning ones are the... The ones that you use.
What?
It's books, it's wall charts. It's, so in terms of books, for instance, you'd have leveled readers for children. You'd have workbooks for children. For
is
teachers,
you, like
yeah.
So
yeah. In the what we have in the it might be in the Gazette, but we did also send out. For instance, if you look at page 12 of the Gazette, you'd have recommended resources for literacy in grades 1 to 3. And we have there for the wall, what would you need for each learner and resources for the teacher. Well, we could change it to materials, but what we mean, I mean, they're basic school resources, but they're basic materials or resources that you need for teaching. It is the same, but what we're saying is that it's a comprehensive pack. Which we're saying is a basic resource package. We always refer to it as a basic resource package, which is really about what a teacher would need for each classroom, for the learner, for the classroom, and for himself to actually teach effectively. So those are spelled out, and what we did in a document that I'm not sure you would have, or I don't know if it was included, but what we then did also was to cost them. What would it cost? Because in fact, it doesn't cost much. I think for literacy, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 12,000 rands per classroom, per class of 40 learners. And therefore, why we did that was so that people can plan and say, this is what we would need. If we were to resource all of our classes, this is how much we would need.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just add, because I think that part of what I see the Foundations for Learning campaign being linked to is also the critical process of monitoring and evaluation. And there have been very recent discussions with the presidency around exactly how 2010 is going to be planned for. A lot of this detail, I think, is going to emerge around certainly clarifying what constitutes stationery that schools must use at different levels, in which the actual exercises can be done, as opposed to a workbook where there would be fairly prescriptive, think, details about what the elements of monitoring will entail, so that that then begins to be described in a more uniform way. So a lot of the foundational elements and the fundamentals are captured within these publications that teachers have been given. But at the same time, through the process of actually sort of rolling out this whole program, more details are beginning to emerge that will point, I think, more to even a parent being able to take a workbook and say, which stage is my child now? So it's about a combination of marrying what actually happens in the classroom in terms of practical exercises, combined with the materials that inform both the pedagogic process as well as the child's individual experience, because I think the whole foundational program is actually based on what each learner's pace of achievement is in relation to what should be genetically possible and evident in the classroom. So I think it's about giving further detail to that, and certainly the process of monitoring and evaluation is giving us more points to consider in doing so. This is Chubeka is the phase expected.
I think, Chair, your point is taken, and we will provide that. When what you see here is more, it makes sense to teachers, but perhaps for somebody who is not a phase teacher, you may not easily understand it, and therefore we'll have to provide that. For instance, a workbook would have, if, for instance, it's a numeracy workbook, you would have 2 plus 1, and then you have a square, and a child is able to fill that in. Whereas the jotters don't have that, so it's not a workbook. A child is not working from there. And what we've done here is they're working from there, but it's not practice. So they are different. They are all in the market, and teachers know these. These things are out there. There are workbooks for learners, but there are exercise books that are clean and which you use for something else. The lined ones you use because you want a child to practice writing in straight lines. So these are all aligned to the curriculum, but I think I take the point, because if you're coming in, I've learned a lot since I came, because I'm not trained as a primary school teacher. And therefore, these were things that did not come easily to me. But these are things that are out there and that we're able to provide examples of. But, Chair, can I just say... Yeah. The things, all we've done is to provide something that can be used for monitoring and that can guide. Because some of our subject advisors would, for instance, start by giving things and lots of readers without saying, because some of the subject advisors perhaps would be like me, they're subject advisors for language, but they were never trained in foundation phase teaching. So what we've done here is to make it clearer to them what they need to provide. So these things, when I say out there in the market, but maybe the system was not providing them in this way for schools and learners. And what we've done is to provide better guidance to say, you can't just provide in a vacuum. There are certain things that are basic if you are teaching. That's what we are monitoring, and certainly the reason why we did them as early as that, it was to influence this year's procurement. However, I do want to say provinces procure on the basis of money that they have, and therefore you may not find it in every school. What we've done in Kids Up, for instance, is to give them these. So for your poorest, you'd start with your 20%, poorest 20%, 40%, but you've given it to all schools, you've given it to all districts to say, you must start here. Before you buy your computer, start by making sure that children have these basics. So, Chair, I cannot vouch and say that every single class, every single school would have. This is what we're working towards. Okay. What we talked. One of the questions was in reference to schools in poorer communities that I've said have shown good performance regardless. Now, Chair, it links to what you asked. Also, your question about the levels of improvement. When we started in 2001, and these are not assessments that are done by just the department, we do them together with the HSRC, and therefore the questions to try and tease out what influences learning come from those researchers as well. The things that I talked about from your practice, what teachers do in the classroom, are some of the things that explain, because even in your poorest schools, you find teachers who are good teachers, who actually engage learners in the learning, and that's what has came out. Your language, for instance, Ntate Kganyago talks about whether breakthrough, which is linked to, in fact, your language, whether that's what makes the difference or not. So all of the things that I had as major predictors of performance were the things that determined whether a school did well or not. So, you know, to varying degrees. So it could be that a teacher is good even though they didn't have all the basic learning and teaching resources. But Chair, what we didn't do right was that although we started testing in 2001, we told people what seemed to impact on learning and teaching, but we didn't give them the kind of structured support. So because we saw that the improvement was 5%, 6%, we then decided to go this route. We are hoping, certainly the improvement that we're looking at now is between 15 to 20% improvement between now and 2000. But because we have now unpacked it much more, so that you're not just telling them, you're telling them, but you're giving them support as well. For instance, those lesson plans, which we do give for all terms, all four terms, those lesson plans were never there before. So now we've given that, and we believe that it's given more structure.
So through you, can I just ask something? Because I don't think my question has been answered, or Ms. Chubekan understood my question. What I'm asking, I understand what you are referring to as issues, whatever that you say, teachers without all that. What I'm asking is, have the department evaluated the schools that are said to be performing bad in bad conditions? That's my question.
What we have, which Chair I could make available as well, we've looked at those schools that work regardless of the conditions. And we have a publication called Schools That Work. And that publication is based on what we see people doing in schools that when you look at, you may think would not do well. So we do have that. We have examined them. And some of the things that I write about here are based on that as well. We had a study on schools that work. What makes schools work?
I think people are trying to understand what makes a successful outcome. Now, you've given in one of these slides, you say 59% is resources, language, or yeah, this thing. Now, if you're saying to me that the problem is with language of learning and teaching, school resources, access to learning materials, and forget time on task, because that's a given, right? Then what I'm saying to you is that those are the things we need to focus on. But the point I think that is being that is trying to be made here is this, that if you have schools who don't have school resources, and you put it at 49%, and yet they are performing well, what is it that makes them perform well? Because it goes to the first question, what did you assess was the problem? Because if I can understand, if you said to me that the problem is teaching, and the way the modules, the lack of a plan when you get into schools and so on, then you produce this, then you are dealing with the problem. Now, if you're telling me that there are schools that have bad conditions who still perform well, it blurs the issue for me in terms of these things that you're pointing to, if you're with me. And I'm just trying to establish in my mind, I think this is wonderful. I think it's wonderful. But are we dealing with the problem is, I think, what people are saying.
Chairperson, we truly believed that we were dealing with the problem. Those things are found in different proportions in different schools. What we are saying, however, is that in our assessment that we were assisted with by JET and the HSRC, we found that teaching practice was a key determinant. And therefore, you can find that in a school, in an environment, and I'm talking about in a school that is in a poor environment, some of the things that don't show here, I mean, I took the big ones. So time on task is actually a big one. The others are 0.whatever%. You find that some of it is about lack of resources in the home. You can find that two schools that have children who come from homes where there are no resources perform differently. And what makes the difference is the teacher in the classroom, the teaching practice. And therefore, that is what we're trying to say, and that is what we're trying to assist with here. So it may not be, they may be in a school that has no real sanitation, but somehow perform better simply because the teacher is dealing with them and engaging them in the learning. But there's another side to it. When I started, I said the foundations for learning is about all schools, so the clarity. But there is another program that works together with this one, which is your Kids Up program. That Kids Up program is to say your schools serving your poorest communities, there are certain things that they all don't have. So you cannot say simply because they outperform their circumstances, it's fine. And therefore, for those schools, the focus is Kids Up is about everything towards improved learning. It's about your toilets, it's about your water, it is about enough classrooms and desks. So these two programs work in complementarity. One is called Kids Up, and we get a special allocation. For this one, we didn't have any special money, because we were told to give more guidance rather than resources. For Kids Up, we get resources to actually go into your poorest schools and prioritize them with all of those resources. So, Chair, I'm not sure, maybe I'm still not understanding, but all I'm saying is that there are different things that come to play, and it's not a single factor. And in some schools, some are more prominent than others. In the study that I was talking about on schools that work, we found that, in fact, the teacher and the leader, the principal, they make the difference. If you've got clear leadership, but here we're looking at, in the total picture of schools that work, that would be the combination that makes them work.
I must say, I'm very, very surprised, because one of the things that I would have thought would be here very prominently would be the teacher-learner ratio. I would imagine that would make a huge difference. But we'll talk about that. I've still got other people and I think you must let us have that manual called Schools at Work, because I think we've benefited a great deal from looking at that. I've got Ms. Moshwana and then Mr. Makubela, and then I'll take a whole, let's take these two, and then, because we're still on questions for clarity, I take it.
Oops. Thank you. I'm sorry about this. I wanted to talk on the resources, but I think she has done justice. That was the first one. That resources definitely refer to books, to the material that learners down there, that's how the educators understand it. And the buildings and other things are infrastructures. But then what I wanted to check about clarity sitting person if I mean was the fact that in Limpopo they teach in English in grade, and because I know for a fact that for the past 3 years it's changed. They from grade R, or rather the foundation phase, they teach in their mother language. We no longer have English, and the confusion that is had at the national level perhaps led to them given English question papers. I know we distributed them to schools. English question papers to grade R1, 2 learners, and it was very difficult for them to respond because for the past 3 years they are teaching in their home language. So maybe that needs to be corrected. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The one question that I had for clarification, which probably may be linked to the one asked by Honorable Kubai earlier, it's on these slides are not necessarily numbered, but it's the one on the foundation. Before that background one. There's one that talks of the grade 6 performance. Yes, that one. You're saying the situation worsens and it's clear that the trends may slightly be the same, but yeah, it's worse. Also, I wanted to understand the factors that explain that. At some point you talked monitoring is able to improve performance and so on. In this regard, what happens? Is there less monitoring? What happens? Well, already you talked leadership in schools and so on. But throughout this documentation, there's just no talk about the governance itself within the school. It's just mainly within the classroom environment. As to the broader issue about the governance in that particular school, there's no mention about that. But I wanted to understand those factors that made telling. As to what happens at that particular level. Secondly, you're talking that 2011, we should have improved by 50%. And now you somewhat in passing referred to over 40% by now. But I wanted to understand why do we pitch it at 50%? Well, what informs us? Are we just saying it's 50%? And it should relate to our own input into the process. Do we think by having developed this documentation to guide teachers in the classroom and learners and so on, is it 50% contribution? Is it proportional? Or having given them everything by now, although there will still be an area which may not be attended to quickly, which is teacher development. If we have given these guides and everything else, aren't we being able to say you could go to within 70% or something? What will be accountable for the other 50% that will not be achieved? Is it teacher development? Even if it means in percentage terms, we should be able to say by now all the resources given amounts to 50%. And the other 50% will only be achieved by the following things. And I'm just interested mainly as to why 50% and what informed that process.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, in relation to the factors that contribute to this, other than the factors that I've mentioned, we haven't really been able to get why the performance would be worse here, other than perhaps explain it by saying there's something that we're not doing in the system as teachers, as managers, that actually makes it, instead of getting better or remaining where it was, if the picture was, as you can see, it tapers much more. So those are issues that we will continue to work on and try and understand.
Yes. Not surprising at all. Because what you haven't factored in is that if at the foundation stage you are unable to read at the appropriate level, so that's already in grade 3, what do you think is going to happen by the time you get to grade 6? It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse because obviously the level at which you're expected to perform increases. So teachers at grade 4 are not going to go back to the grade 3 curriculum and sit down with you and make sure that you get it when you don't get it. So grade 4 is going to continue through its syllabus because that's how the system works.
and then likewise grade 5 and then grade 6. So clearly, as you go up in the grades, it's going to just become worse. And what? And this is the other problem that you have with this, is that implementation, as I understand it, is only going to start happening next year. Isn't that so? But you just said, when I said to you that the Government Gazette was issued in 2008, you don't have full implementation of all of the of your learning campaign now, in this year. Am I correct or am I not correct? You've got implementation this year.
The way this campaign was implemented was the, and it was about clarity of what we're expecting everybody in the system to be doing. And we made it clear that it's not dependent on additional resources. So you're saying, firstly, if you're a teacher in the classroom, these are the things you're supposed to be doing, and this was out last year, and therefore you were not saying implementation is deferred to any later date. You're saying you're supposed to be doing these things and how this is how you do it. All we're doing is to increase our support, and therefore for us, implementation is happening.
Let me tell you the outcome of these things. It's not happening at all. And these are just some of the members. Not even all of the members have responded to this thing. But just to those small number of schools that we could reach through our constituency offices and so on. Ms. Mashishi's response, and she was looking at two schools in Limpopo. What's the district? What's the... Waterberg. One of the schools had the documentation. Now, one assumes that it's the Government Gazette, and one didn't. So there you get 50% just right there. Mr. Smiles was lucky because for some reason, all of the schools that he had, which is essentially in the in Graaf-Reinet area, Eastern Cape, all of his schools had them. Ms. Madlala, who went to Springs, Kwatema, to be specific, none of the schools that she had, and she had two schools there, both of which were secondary schools. None of them knew what this was about. Dr. Kloppers Lawrence, Potchefstroom, in the northwest, two of the schools there, am I right? They're both in Potchefstroom, northwest. Dr. Kloppers Lawrence? Okay. And then in Swane? Okay. So they've received there. Tswane district, they've received. And Gauteng, you don't say where last school, Boerevoort is. Tswane. Okay. So you double checked that they had it. So Gauteng and Northwest seem to be okay. Then Mr. Hanyaho, Limpopo. Where about in Limpopo is this, Mr. Hanyaho? Polokwane. Both of them had it. Because the foundations, yeah. Okay. Then you've got Ms. Dudley, who basically, I'm only now dealing with the primary school. The Herbert Heard Primary School, they were not sure whether they had, they were going to come back to. I don't know if they've come back to. They don't have it. Imbasa Primary School, no. Port Elizabeth. Then Ms. Gina, KZN. It's a rural school. They're still awaiting their name and their location. Okay. We won't even go into that problem. they've received the Gazette, but assessment guideline document did not arrive. Then there's another school, again, awaiting name. These are all, I assume, smaller schools, rural areas. They've received theirs. And then she spoke to the district coordinator, confirmed that the Gazette was distributed to all 608 schools, but only 400 copies of the guideline document was distributed. Then I've got a very interesting, more detailed one, which Mr. Makubele just gave to me today. And maybe, Mr. Makubele, you want to just go through it, because I'm not quite sure. Maybe, have you got a copy of it before? Okay. Maybe you should come and just outline to us which ones don't have it. Leave the ones that do, but just outline the ones that don't.
It's a broader area. Perhaps also you'll have a look at it. After I've presented, you'll know it goes to even the assessment phases or framework and so on both grades 3 and 6. Now, it's at the district level. You'll see it's from the department. So it's official information, which they also have there. But you have got schools around Kwankoa, 18 of them, that are not sure of this whole thing we're talking about. Or initially, let me perhaps just talk to three of the things that you would understand. One is that the three documents on foundations for learning were never given to curriculum advisors in circuits. Schools are claiming that they received some material from the National Department of Education in their posts, and others allege that they were delivered by courier service directly to their schools. There's one that they even claimed the material went to the police station. The second is that no formal workshop for curriculum advisors or teachers was held by the provincial office in the intermediate phase. That availability of the Gazette Foundation Phase Assessment Framework and Intermediate Phase Assessment Framework, and they did this own initiated training themselves on some of them. When you give it to you, you'll see what they might have done. And that on Foundation Phase and Intermediate Phase Assessment Frameworks distribution, this official only gave circuit managers who had flash disks, and they have started making copies for their schools, as shown in the above table. Yeah, and in other circuits, that was loaded on their own systems. So you would know there are about schools in Tzaneen which were supposed to be 32, most of whom on the other phases and the assessments, they are not certain what is supposed to happen in terms of the regular process. And I already talked of Nkwankowa. In Shoko areas, there were supposed to be 12 schools and nobody received anything. The Gazettes and so on. This you can double check as well from office whether indeed what they saying here may be true or not. And other schools do claim to have had the Gazette and done the assessments throughout and even the training. But we have got only this copy. So probably you can get a copy from Mr. Brown before leaving. Yes. So you can respond to it.
We're a small group here, actually. And members were really only focusing on their constituencies. I think Mr. Makubele went to the district and got a report from them on this, whereas the rest of the members actually phoned the schools in their constituencies to see whether, in fact, they've even heard. Some of them haven't even heard of it. So I think therein lies a big, big challenge, firstly. And I know you don't distribute them yourselves and so on, that you rely on the districts to do so. No, you do it yourself. Well, then that's a problem.
Chair, I think let me start by saying, firstly, I've also been to schools who say they haven't received. In one school, I went to a school that I'd attended, the primary school that I had gone to myself, and they said they hadn't received. And I had a meeting with the staff, and they had a copy of the document. And they said, oh, you mean this blue book? Now, the problems in the system are many. Sometimes they say they haven't. I've been to schools and they say, oh, it's those documents that are received, you know, they must be in principal so-and-so's office or deputy principal. So there are two issues here. Sometimes schools receive and they don't open and they don't use. We know it even with textbooks. So the monitoring is very important. You are right, all of us monitoring. And I'm sure we'll be assisted a lot by the committee as well, where in your own constituencies. The second thing is that we tried a different approach this time from what we've used before. With many of the things we've sent to districts, and districts have said they don't have the capacity to distribute, so they didn't distribute. And this time what we did was to send directly to schools and send backup copies to districts so that they don't have to wait for districts. Now, some of them have come back, address unknown, and for those, we have taken kids up coordinators to go and distribute to the schools. So indeed, you may find that there are schools that haven't received. We're trying to do it two ways, so that we don't have gatekeeping by districts, because what we're trying to get away from, which we may not have got right, was to write simple documents that don't need mediation, because if you're going to have to train, because that was the problem with curriculum 2005, where we said we're going to train every teacher, and teachers said we haven't been trained. So we wrote these in the simplest way possible to say you really don't need somebody else to train you to do it. And that's why we want to focus on strengthened monitoring rather than on training of the teachers. The documents are self-sufficient in many ways. So we've tried to do that. But you are right, there are a range of issues. Firstly, our information system, our database. There are many problems with the addresses. So some of the addresses have come back. But this is information that we get from the schools themselves and from the district. But Chel, can I just say, yeah, so we're trying to...
That's fine. The point we're trying to make here is that they're not being implemented in all schools. So you've lost a year. By 2011, when you hope to see a 50% rise, even taking the comments that Mr. Macabella is making about why 50 and not more and so on, the point of the matter is we've lost this year in some schools, so they're not uniformly implemented. Now let's assume, for the sake of argument, that next year you will get 100% implementation. Let's assume, let's hope, okay? Hopefully one of the things that you're doing is working on those challenges. And by next year, let's assume we're doing that. So you've got 2010 at which to really make a difference. And by 2011, you hope to see huge results. The difficulty that I have is this issue that was raised here, is how do you, by 2011, your grade threes that you were assessing, they're going to be in what, grade five, right? In the interim, you have these bad practices and so on, and you're not dealing with their challenges that have already started probably by, you know, in grade one and grade two. So do you have something special that you're doing to rectify the backlogs? I call it backlogs for lack of a better word. That will allow a degree of, shall we say, realignment to the point where it's wonderful that you've got a worksheet for every day or whatever it is, a plan for every day. Once they've reached, let's say, grade three, having started in grade one this year. But if grade one was a disaster for the child and when I say a disaster, they're performing at your 30% level, which is really a disaster. Grade 2 is not going to be very much better. Grade 3 is where the intervention is felt. And guess what? You're dealing with grade 3 syllabus. You're not dealing with the foundations where the backlog is actually felt. So that's my concern about these targets as well. As much as Mr. Makubela says, well, maybe we should be seeing a 70% target as opposed to a 50. I'm telling you, you're going to see less than 50.
You're very right. There are multiple things that are in the system. One is more stringent promotion and progression requirements. Because one of the things that, again, confounded the implementation of the curriculum was that we said a child should progress with their age cohort and only repeat once per phase. Now, in many ways, teachers did not hold children back. So what children needed to be able to do and know in grade 1 was not always used before they were promoted to grade 2. We don't want children failed unduly, but you need to be able to, for children, like you're saying, for children to be able to operate at grade 4 level, they should at least have grasped the basics in the foundation phase. And therefore, that has been put into the system. And we're hoping that will influence performance. But Chair, you're right. We do think that, well, personally, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I think we may not get the 50% target that we're working towards, simply because of the level of performance at the moment. But every educationist knows that if you set a very low benchmark for your children, I mean, you cannot set low expectations and expect to achieve quality. It is known in all of the systems that we've studied that do well, you must expect your children to do well. If you don't expect them to do well, you're almost condemning them to not doing well. And therefore, we're saying as a system, it is unacceptable for our children, for the aggregate performance to be below 50% in any school. And therefore, it's part of that. It's an educational reality that you do that. And we've got to work together towards that. Because what we've given to schools now, which we started last year when they wrote, was to give them back their own feedback. To say, your children are performing at this level, and therefore you're condemning the children of this country to this poor levels of performance. So what we're doing is to make every teacher feel responsible for their own children, and we're hoping through that, Chair, we can improve. But I do agree that 15 to 20% improvement in educational terms, but we're creating a crisis around this to say we must all work towards it, because 50% is, after all, not so high. But as I was saying, already 40% of our children are performing at that level and above. 40% of our children, but the aggregate performance is not good enough. But we've got children who are already more than 40% at 50% and above at grade 3 and at grade 6.
Doesn't lend a sense of comfort at all to say, you know, the issue is not about targets. I'm happy that you set 50%. I'm not saying, you know, set a lower target. In fact, Mr. Makubela's point is set it at 70%. But the point of the matter is, if you don't address the problem, you're not going to achieve very much close to anything. Because the problem is at your foundation level. And if children are being promoted when they shouldn't be promoted and so on, for various reasons, some of which is actually quite practical. In some areas, you only have one primary school. And so they have to make way for other kids to come in and so on and so on. Now, the problem then is, how do we, when a child is already in grade 3, deal with the deficiencies that were manifest in grade 1 and grade 2? That's really the issue. And I don't hear you talking about that issue. And that's really what worries me a little. I'm not an educationist, so I don't know what those mechanisms should be. If you were to say to me that these work plans are actually also featuring some of that in your different grades, so that where there are certain deficiencies arising from your evaluation, you still haven't told me how you actually do the evaluations, that those things are then featured again in grade 2 and then they carried on to grade 3 and so on and so on. Then that lends a sense of comfort, because then I know that you're alive to that problem. But if it is just taking the grade 3 syllabus and saying, well, we're doing work plans for you, we're making it easier for you, you don't need training, this is what you need to do, we're literally taking your hand and we're guiding you through the thing,
That's fine. That's fine for the teachers. But then you're not dealing with the substantive issue, which is the deficiencies felt at grade ones and grade twos, where this was not implemented. Do you know what I mean? But let me give you another. Vivian, you want?
Also, just a brief addition, Chair. And I think it's related largely to the last points that you were raising, and that is that in terms of, you know, with the best will in the world, you know, all of the planning that needs to be done must take account of the cross-sectoral interests, lines of interest within the department, both nationally but also provincially and interprovincially. The issue here is that there's a quantitative measure in terms of how many books can reach so many schools, but it's also about the qualitative elements involved here, and I think that's our challenge. And this is where the monitoring, the oversight functions, actually being able to test what provinces are doing with the materials that they have. Because it's criminal that if there are curriculum advisors that have not received something which has been gazetted and materials which are readily available, why that is allowed to happen. Now, that clearly is the department's challenge, but likewise is the challenge of provinces and whoever exercises oversight at those levels. This is not about passing the buck. It's actually about saying, if education is indeed a societal issue, how do we make it a society's, you know, sort of access to information? And our challenge here then is, how do we best communicate what is available? And I know that Mr. Baker addressed a mass meeting of principals in Limpopo, both on the Foundations for Learning campaign and the Quality Learning and Teaching campaign. So I'm at a loss as to what exactly happened in the interim. If these things were available as from March, and that meeting happened in August, I think sometime. No, later in November, because the quality campaign was only launched in October. And I know that there was this event planned where every single principal in the province was in the same venue to be briefed on the Foundations for Learning campaign as well as the quality campaign. So what we need to address is what happens in terms of how information is communicated. And I think all of your comments are taken on board. What we need to do is to go back into the department and say, in terms of our planning, these are the monitoring and evaluation elements that we need to factor into our process. Because we cannot generate this material and have it sitting in some principal's office and boxes. So certainly what I will take back is, in terms of our communication strategy, how do we best improve on that to make sure that the information is out there. But the second element is that human development element that you also pointed out, that interaction and the ratios, learner-teacher ratios, which brings me to the point about intersectoral planning within the department. We can't simply have Foundations for Learning existing within the branch G that's responsible for general education without taking on board the IQMS process in branch P, for instance. You know, it's those elements that we need to marry. So I'm pleased that the members are supporting us in this, because I think those are the elements in terms of broader planning that takes us out of our usual siloed functional areas within the department, because none of these targets will be met. And I'm responsible largely for coordinating all of the program of action elements for the department, and there lies our public tool of measurement, the instrument of measurement. Because if we set ourselves a target for March 2010, for all of the materials to be distributed, then we should be held accountable for how we're going to be able to account for how many schools have received and not received. On the other level, also, we have the issue of feedback from the IQMS process, because there's a lot of work that's happening, and happening very well in most provinces, but not in all provinces. Because in some cases, there's a resistance to IQMS evaluators having access to schools. So we must look at that as well. And I think it would probably serve the committee well to probably get a report from the IQMS process, because that would give us a good sense of where there is effective monitoring and quality assurance happening, and what the feedback and responsiveness of schools as individual sites are. And so I don't want to go into too much detail, but I do believe that there are remedies to hopefully ensuring that the targets are possible, that we're not paralyzed by the challenge, but that we actually begin to look at a different kind of alignment of our functional areas. And I'm optimistic that with there being greater vigilance from monitoring and evaluation, that we can have to account for whether the workbooks are there, whether they've been produced, whether they've reached the target areas. All of those issues, I think, become the immediate responsibility. Otherwise, you know, what are we doing in our houses? That is something we'll take back.
We'll give you an
I've been in the department since we started in 1984, and I didn't want you to feel very despondent. For the first time, I have found so much feedback from schools, and I have actually been sharing with my colleagues at senior management the weekly letters, virtually weekly, that we get from schools on the Foundations for Learning. Most of them very appreciative. So much as we may have found schools that haven't received, it is the one program that schools say they're receiving and that they're grateful for. In the curriculum implementation review that the minister will probably report on quite soon, we found that, in fact, 96% of the teachers teaching in the foundation phase and intermediate phase express nothing but appreciation for the support that they're getting from the Foundations for Learning. So I think that we must see, you know, in that light as well. It really is hitting the ground, and it's addressing the things that teachers feel that they need addressed. Whether, in fact, it will then translate into the improved performance that we're all looking for is something else. But, Chair, can I also say one of the things that is key to the Foundations for Learning campaign is the involvement of parents. We haven't had money to really be out there in their faces all the time, but one of the things that is expected and that is strong in here is individual assessment records for each learner, so that each parent can say, if Balesa was performing like this at this point, why am I not seeing any improvement? And one of the things that we've done through our partnership with Avusa is to say, what should your child be able to do in grade 3? So that if your child, your own child, is not able to do that, you can have that link to the school and to the teacher to say, but why is my child not improving? So we're trying to do that, and we'd appreciate help from the committee in doing that. I can send that, because we designed a wheel to say, in literacy, what is a child in grade 3, you know, expected to do at this level? And if you've got a child who's in grade 3, you, as a parent, should be worried if your child is not achieving those things. So it really is a multifaceted attempt to address the issues. I appreciate the concern that the members are raising, because it's a real concern. The performance is really not as good as it should be, but I think we're trying our best. And if there's any area, and you've raised some of the issues, and increased monitoring is going to be one of them, you've raised some of the issues that continue to be a concern to you, and we'll try and address it.
Members?
Oh, yes. Two members on this side that I didn't recognize before, so I'm going to give both of you the opportunity. Should go age before beauty, or ladies first? Or see the two of you. I'm going to leave it to the two of you to decide.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think our exercise today is to improve the quality of education. And my contribution will be with regard to just putting the critical success factors, and then move on a way forward. And my questions will be blunt and maybe to an extent unacceptable. I would just like the question. Yeah, all right. Can I just establish from the department the foundations for learning and the culture of learning and teaching? Are you sort of integrating those two things? Because we see campaigns coming, and then we forget about the other campaign. There was a campaign for courts, right? But then, because of some factors, then we leave it out because people don't want IQMS, and then we leave it. But it was good to have calls. We need it. So I just want to know, you know, whether you integrating and bring that back to say calls has not been forgotten. It's part of it. It's part of this foundation for learning. Then on the monitoring and evaluation, I think Ms. Carlson did indicate, and I just want to emphasize, teachers, it's the teachers that will be the main element of giving effect to the FFL. If the teachers are not committed, if they are not receiving this well, then we might as well say, okay. But I want, and I think all of us want to succeed. We want to get it right this time. We didn't get it right the first time. We want to get it right this time. So teachers must be appreciative of that, and we want to get it right for the learners. So monitoring in evaluation, I mean, the president has spoken. It's a non-negotiable. IQMS have to take place. The inspector, I will use that word because the school inspector will come into the class and he will ask for Roger. Roger, please bring book one. Open up a page, please read. Random test, as the chairperson has said. It's the only way that you can check teaching methods. It's the only way. By filling in a form, it will not assist. And then there must be a report from that school inspector to say, we have found this. I'm coming back within 3 months to check whether the recommendations that I made, whether you have implemented that recommendation. That's the way. It's hard. It's long. It's not a quick fix, but that is the way to do it. So monitoring and evaluation must take place, and it must be done properly, correctly. The medium of instruction, I think that was indicated, but I would like the Kaihudi principle. It worked for them. It can work here. So if Kaihudi has made it with medium of instruction, the mother tongue, then we need not even to discuss whether it should be English. Only it needs to be all the official languages. Support services, chairperson. I think the support services, and this is now the districts and the subject advisors, including the EDOs or the school inspectors. There are schools that work. Now, what about them? We cannot leave them. They must be encouraged. They must be motivated to do even better whilst we're pulling up the others. And it can be done only by proper and good support services. The support services must be in place, and those that are doing well must be rewarded, they must be encouraged, and the others that are not doing well must be brought in, on board. It can be done by good support services. The last thing, there was many input about resources provision and management. But after all is said and done, after we've done everything, Honorable Chairperson, the campaign is coming to an end in 2011. What after that? Will we, by then, maybe, I'm just saying maybe, we just have got some momentum on the whole thing. And then, now it's 2011. Is it going to stop? What is in place so that we, if we get the momentum, that we maintain it, we sustain it, so that it can be part of what we should be done, not as a campaign only, but it is normal practice, it is school practice, it is curriculum delivery, what we are doing. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Chair, I think with the last question Honorable Smiles has come up with, I think he has partly covered me because I wanted to talk on questionnaire assessment, this national assessment that is done, as to say you have said that it should be done also this year, but we have seen the loopholes in all the process. of rolling out all the documentation to schools, making sure that all the schools are aware of it. So what is it that we do? Because I think by us even postponing that assessment where we can get an overall assessment of what is going on, what is happening in all the schools, then we are definitely pushing away the date for the campaign, of which for now we cannot say the campaign is it's up and kicking. So can't we, what is it that you are saying about this 2011? Can we push away the date for the campaign as to say maybe by 2012, by 2013, that is where we'll be convinced as to say everybody has received this and it's happening. And again, I think we need to talk about the issue of distributing the documents as such, because really it's not, I don't think it's a complaint from Limpopo only as to say even the management, starting from the office space, the advisors, the management at schools, they're not aware of these documents, really. The HODs, the people that we think they have to be champions around this issue, as to say, if they are there with the educators, then maybe we won't see the impact exactly as what is happening. So I know we have talked of EE training, EE, that advocacy system that we are doing, we OBE, the problems that we have encountered, but really we need to come up with a strategy. How do we make sure that all the levels concerned, they are aware of this? And when we talk of monitoring at school, we cannot expect an HOD to monitor a performance of an educator without knowing exactly what is happening, what the document is all about. That is why in some of the schools we find to say the document is there, but they are not even aware of what is it, because it was just dropped at the school and nothing was said to them. So even though how easy the language may be, how understandable it is to the educators, if they were not given that sort of a workshop or orientation around the document as such, really I don't see us reaping any fruits at the end. And lastly, we have been talking about this Kids Up program, and there are achievements that have been seen in those schools, of which I don't think those achievements should remain with those schools only that have been identified. So if ever we do have a very limited number of schools who have improved through the program, why can't we take things that are happening in those schools? I know some of them, they might... They might need more money, like there are so many things, provision, basic and teaching resources. But there are resources really that does not need that, those donations that you have been talking about. But why can't we use, if ever they've improved the way they improve the performance in those schools, let us use what have been done in the Kids Up schools and make sure that you spread out to all the schools so that these two processes can complement each other. So we know that the foundations of learning are there in all the primary schools, and what is it that they've gained in Kids Up schools so that you can make sure that you supplement even in the other schools so that you don't remain with it only limited of number of rural areas where they perform better, because indeed we see they are performing better than those that were not chosen to be part of the Kids Up program. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. We also take Ms. Shishi, and then I'll give you both an opportunity to respond. Let them respond, and then I'll take another round. Thank you, Chairperson. I thought maybe you said they must respond first. No, to the side. But thank you very much. On that slide of key strategies and documents, I heard you were saying, you were talking about the lesson plans, and then you mentioned that they can just do follow the guidance that you were talking about, or they can make their own. I don't know whether maybe I catch you clearly on that one. And then I was suggesting, why, if maybe there are some other schools who are following the guidance and others come with their own things, why can't they do the uniform things? And then secondly, on that one of parents' involvement, how do you involve parents on assessing their children? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
I think, firstly, perhaps let me start with the issue of the different campaigns and how we hope to see sustainability for this one. And I think I'll link it to whether we can push the boundaries. Firstly, what we did with the Foundations for Learning, which is different from your cause campaign, and I'm speaking as somebody who was actually the national program manager for the cause campaign as well. For the cause campaign, what we did was to appeal to people to ensure that there's a culture of learning and teaching to keep schools safe. So it was more an appeal, it was more based on advocacy. It is very much aligned, although we look at it differently, to the Quality Learning and Teaching campaign, which talks about the non-negotiables. What are the things that teachers and managers should be doing, which are not negotiable, really. The Foundations for Learning, in a sense, comes in at a different level in that it gives things that are permanent, resources that will remain. Those lesson plans are not lesson plans that can work this year and not work next year, whether it's 2016 or whatever, they are there. So we're looking at what we put in the system that will remain in the system. The only campaign thing about it is that we're trying to lift the profile and the focus of everybody in the system. The 2011 is really because what we were trying to do is to say, we pulled out, you may be aware, we pulled out of international assessments because we're saying these international assessments were telling us the same thing that we know. Without us getting down to work as a country, it really is just demotivating for the country, for the learners of this country to be told every time that they're doing badly. And therefore we wanted to put energy into trying to improve. Chair, I mean, I accept completely what the committee members are saying about maybe not everybody knowing what is out there. We have certainly done our best and we'll continue to strengthen that. But I don't think we have an option as this country. We cannot postpone the focus on improved performance. And therefore, I don't think we can postpone. We can continue post-2011, but I don't think we can postpone. I think you may have in your packs a letter that was written by the DG in April last year to all, it went to all schools. All schools. I mean, we didn't choose, we didn't leave it to chance. We sent, there were letters to each principal, there were letters to each teacher. And we'll continue to try and do that. But we sent to all schools, and it was on the campaign, what is it that are the minimum expectations and what should we be doing? The reason why I was saying we are not asking everybody to implement in lockstep, as it were, it's simply that there are people who really are already creative. What we're expecting everybody to do is to achieve the minimums. That is not a negotiable. But for instance, let me use the numeracy lesson plans. There are numeracy teachers who are saying, well, this is very good, but I don't sequence my teaching like that. I don't like what you've done to, for instance, there are some components in numeracy that we've spread over the year. And some teachers have said, no, I teach it. If I teach fractions, I teach fractions and finish. I don't want to split it over the year. And we want to acknowledge that teachers are professionals. What your approach may not be my approach. All we want is to hold you to the outcomes that everybody should have. And therefore, we're not wanting to stop good teaching. There may be teachers who are good and who deliver the goods. We don't want to stop that. We just want to make sure that all children achieve the outcomes.
Thank you, Sister Angel. I think that the my role as the coordinator for Quality Learning and Teaching campaign is sometimes frustrated by the fact that we actually need a campaign of this nature. But I think that the broader issue around education becoming a societal issue and the fact that we need non-negotiable elements to be part of that, including teacher participation, learner buy-in, parent and community support, all of those issues are what those broader factors are that are meant to hopefully improve the approach to what happens in schools and around schools. So the way we've understood the campaign is that it should in fact fundamentally almost sort of, you know, move from the status of a campaign to actually becoming part of the culture within schools. And so that we're looking at the value of the campaign, particularly now, to focus both public and systemic attention around the resources required. So when you talk about teacher buy-in and the unions particularly have been brought on board as critical partners in this campaign together with the department. So there's a steering committee made up of union principals that are meeting fairly consistently around this volume. Either myself or the DG convenes those meetings. We've just now begun to look at a refocus of the campaign. So we're going to be using the October period to look at the month of teachers being that critical sort of point of departure yet again. But it's not about what offers us the photo opportunity or the public mileage around the campaign. It's actually what alters in the space where learning and teaching should be happening. So that, I think, is part of the buy-in. We're holding union principals to account. We're holding departmental officials to account. Because unless we have that partnership in place, the secondary partners almost become the learners, the parents, everyone else. It's the fundamentals of what we provide in the classrooms and what human intervention there is. So in terms of what we've held union principals to account on is how well the message has filtered down to membership and how well within the department officials are conscious of commitments made at ministerial and departmental level. So it's largely around advocacy, but it's also about exposing whatever those issues are that will be contributing to improved outputs at the end of the day, I think is where this campaign is focused, so that it doesn't in any way eclipse the needs of the Foundations for Learning approach or any of the other campaigns, whether it's about providing school nutrition as part of our programmatic interventions, but it's also about making sure that all these things work in synergy with each other, because otherwise the campaign has no value or life of its own, except to ensure that we have synergy across all of those systems. The second element is, and I think maybe at a later stage when we do have the opportunity to speak about that particular campaign, or to look at other interventions around quality imperatives, then we would need to look at what the role is of society more broadly, and there's a focused approach now to bringing business on board to ensure that there's mileage and support out there as well in terms of how they support, because I mean, the government can't provide all of the resources solely as one of the stakeholders there. So I didn't want to add anything else. I think Mrs. Trebek has covered most of those. If there are questions we have not addressed, then I'll certainly come back to it in terms of that aspect.
Thanks. Okay, thanks. It will be quick ones. I think that some of them will just need a yes, no kind. We introduced today the RM schools. Can we claim by now that in every primary school where they can have, still building schools that do not have them? The other, the infrastructure, is it the provincial competency or you also provide, or you just indicating what is needed, it will be for provinces to deal with that. All you're doing will be the soft part about the materials and so on, learning materials. The underdeveloped teachers, I know at some point there were private teachers and so on, and I think they've been phased out. Or there is such a process to phase them out so that everybody is qualified and so on. But my interest was in which grades are they concentrated? Because on the earlier point we were raising about the grade 6 assessments where it was poorly performing learners then, an element I thought could be this one as well. It depends also on where these underdeveloped teachers are, how huge is the problem? Can we be able to say this is what, and do we have any target to say we could have dealt with that by this particular time, whether you need 5 years or or anything? But also trying to ask that question differently. is it not also the question or issue wherein higher education institutions produce teachers whom we don't entirely appreciate in the manner in which they are, or there is some collaboration between ourselves as government, particularly through the department, and institutions of higher learning in terms of saying this is the kind of teacher we need. The very last one, which is a proposal, in as much as you issued out this documentation in a most simplified manner for teachers to know what they should be doing, and as well as the fact that you do receive feedback from individual teachers, which I take is not very coordinated, I thought you may want to create that feedback forum, wherein at some point you are able to meet with them and just get to hear from them, now that you give them all these materials, how do they find it? Are there challenges? Are they fine? Other than just receiving individual feedback from people who will say things positively and so on, so that you pick up on some of their experiences where they are in one group, under one group, and they are able to assist when you need to assist. For instance, if they do need to train, you may need to hear from them whether it's necessary for this training, and engage with them so that if it ends up being dismissed, but there will be a common understanding that you don't need training, unlike when they are sitting somewhere and think they need training, and you sit somewhere else and say, but this is simple, you don't necessarily need training. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think maybe let me start with the comments on making people read. I wanted to say something that perhaps is not so politically correct, but it links to the issues of mind shift, because what we're finding is that we as educators don't read as much as we should be reading. And therefore we find that even when we send these things, even the Gazette, in some of the schools they're not read, because we haven't ourselves developed a culture of reading. And that is why sometimes people will say, and I found it in Limpopo, I talk of Limpopo fondly because, as Mr. Kanyapo will know, that's where I worked, I spent most of my working career. So it's a province that I know very well. And many of the district officials said they hadn't received the documents that they hadn't read them. We don't read as teachers and as educationists generally, which is something that we need to deal with. But I wanted to answer your question about then the parents. We can only appeal to parents. What we're trying to do now, working with Vivian, is to look at how we utilize much more creative ways of reaching out to parents. We've been doing it through print media. We want to look at community radio stations. But what is important, our appeal in the campaign to parents is to say, this is what your children should know. This is how you help them with it. Reading to your children, reading with your children, getting your children to read to you, checking their homework. It's all of the things that we've written here. So it's those little things. But it's finding the right vehicles to talk to parents. There was a question also, Chair, on Kids Up, saying Kids Up, definitely where we have worked in Kids Up schools, they have improved. Why don't we use the same approach? Just to say it's the same approach. The only difference with Kids Up schools is that because we recognize that they serve your poorest communities, we've prioritized them in terms of the national giving them the resources. But otherwise, the expectations are the same. But because those are the schools that have been declared no-fee schools as well, and therefore because we know they've got particular challenges, that's why they were declared no-fee schools, we go in with much more interventionist programs. You cannot do that in 27,000 schools, but at least those, you know, whether they constitute 40% of the schools or 60%, you know that you can go into them. There are a lot of questions that came up. Firstly, let me start with the feedback forum. What we did, there are two things that we've done. We've established, and I recognize that this is used mainly by people who have access to internet, we have a Tutong portal. And there we converse with teachers. Teachers give us our feedback. The improvements that we're making are from that Tutong portal. But the key element of the curriculum implementation review process was to talk to teachers across the country and get teachers to talk to you. The teachers that I say, 96% of them expressed appreciation. It was not in writing. It was through those face-to-face interactions. We spoke to about 500 teachers altogether, and that was quite useful. Chair, there are lots of questions that have come up about whether we deal with the infrastructure issues, your hard issues in the provinces, or just the soft issues. I don't think providing resources and teacher capacity is necessarily soft issues, but that's where the bulk of the money goes to the provinces, and therefore at national level, we do not have hard resources to actually do some of those things. So we can really provide more guideline documents and policy documents, and where we can, like in your poorest schools, try and raise money to provide the resources. These things we have developed at national level. We have just taken all the money that we have for running programs and reprioritized so that at least these things get out. So these were developed nationally. But teachers and higher education institutions, the questions came from different angles. When we started, there was a major issue indeed of unqualified and underqualified teachers. Over the years, the numbers have been reduced dramatically, either through the programs, the National Professional Diploma in Education or the Advanced Certificate in Education that have been in the system, or by teachers themselves upgrading their own qualifications. At the moment, the last audit that we did on teacher qualifications showed two things. Firstly, the numbers because I didn't expect the question, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but the numbers had reduced dramatically. Where you found many unqualified or underqualified teachers, you found them in the foundation phase, particularly in grade R. Because there's a policy not to appoint teachers who are unqualified anymore, we don't find many teachers, new teachers in the system who are being employed who are unqualified. There are provinces that are an exception. For instance, we found that in KwaZulu-Natal, there's still a lot of appointment of unqualified or underqualified teachers. They have argued it out by saying that rather than not have a teacher at all, because in your more rural communities, they find that they aren't able to get your qualified teachers, so they have continued to employ those. But Chair, I think also that we must understand in its proper context. Some of the teachers who are seen to be unqualified actually have degrees and master's qualifications. What they don't have is a professional qualification, a teaching qualification, and therefore that we're looking at. And the main problem in the system is more one of utilization of teachers. Teachers are used to teach subjects that they are not trained in, and that we're trying to look at. Sometimes you will find maths teachers who are not teaching mathematics, and we say we have a shortage of mathematics teachers because teachers don't want to leave the schools where they are teaching to go to schools that are under-resourced. And therefore, that's an issue, and they may end up teaching subjects that they are not qualified to teach. That's an area that we're looking at. We are working very closely with higher education institutions. One of the things that is coming out very strongly is that many of our higher education institutions are not training to meet the context in which we're working. So you find teachers who have qualifications, but who are not well clued up on the curriculum even. And therefore you find teachers who come into the system that you need to still train in the system. But we work very closely with the Dean's Forum, and that is an issue that we're addressing. Lastly, Chair, the issue of grade R, the question about universal access to grade R was not access in all of the, it was not to have every single school having a grade R class. It was to ensure that every child who goes into the system, who goes to grade one, has had access to grade R. I don't know whether I'm making the difference clear. So that some of the children would access grade R in community sites, not necessarily in the school situation. At the moment, we're around 80%, I think 77% achievement of universal access to grade R. There are provinces like KwaZulu-Natal, I think I must mention, because I've mentioned KwaZulu-Natal in terms of appointing teachers who are unqualified. In terms of universal access, grade R is almost at, KwaZulu-Natal is almost at 100%. Five other provinces are at 80%. Where we have a problem is in Gauteng. Gauteng, we're not sure why, we are under 50% achievement, and therefore, that's why there was all this in the media about us not meeting that. But there is commitment. Where we have a challenge is whether it is access to quality grade R, and that's probably a separate presentation, Chair, if we were to talk about our access to grade R, but that's where we are with it.
Just outline to me exactly what is supposed to be in schools by when. Because clearly you have these, then you have those, and you have the Gazette, and so on. So just explain properly to us and give us timelines so that we know exactly what is meant to be in which schools, by when?
In all schools, as we speak, they should have the Gazette. All of the primary schools from grade 1 to grade 6. So from grade 1 to grade 6, all schools should have the Gazette at the moment. All schools from grade 1 to grade 6 should have what we call the assessment frameworks. Now, yes. Most teachers refer to it as the milestones document. All schools should have the milestone document. It is in two parts, so that there are two copies, grades 1 to 3 and grades 4 to 6. All schools should be having it by now. All schools should have what we call the quarterly assessment activities. grades 1 to 6. Assessment activities for literacy and numeracy. All schools should have that. All schools, Chair, should have written, and I know some of them will not have written, should have written their annual standardized assessments in 2008 and should be able to tell you how their schools performed. And all schools should have written at the end of 2008 a standardized test for all their grade 1 to 6, and they should have analyzed their performance. They should be able to tell you how their children performed and what improvement plans they have set in place for the school. All quintile 1 schools, your poorest 20%, all quintile 1 schools should have lesson plans for grades 1 to 3 for term 1. All quintile 1 schools, all quintile 1 primary schools should have lesson plans for the first term for grades 1 to 3. Lesson plans, those. What is going out to schools, which probably would be useful to check at the beginning of 2010, are lesson plans for grades 1 to 6 for all 4 terms, for all quintiles. What we're sending them out in November, Chair. So I was saying by January they should all have it. They should all have it. They should have the lesson plans. What we do they are like this is one file, but in each file here you find only the first term. But we send so that they put in what they are getting like for next year. They should have a file that has for all 4 terms inside the file.
One.
We wanted to see whether it's what they want because they'd asked for the lesson plans. Chair, in January, what you can be checking is all those lesson plans, but in January, all schools should have written the annual standardized test for 2009. They write in November. And all of them in January should be knowing how their children performed in that test and should be able to tell you what it is that what target they've set for themselves in the school and how it is that they're going to work towards getting that target. So there's an improvement target. This is a requirement by law for schools to set school improvement plans, and we've put this as a key issue. Chair, perhaps I should also add that for members who are interested, they can log into our Tudong portal to get a sense of what teachers are saying to us. And if they looked under Tudong, if they looked at the DOE website and used the Tudong link, they can look for Foundations for Learning within the Tudong link, and they will get the information that they need. Tudong portal, in fact, in there, you can actually see the documents also that are in there, and you can point some of your teachers who are able to access the tutorial. What? All schools with grade R, Chair, also in November will get what we're calling the grade R resource kit, and it will be sent to all schools in November of this year. But I also offer, because what we've been trying to do with our Kids Up schools, because the intention is for all schools to have the resources, where members have been to schools and they're finding that their schools don't have, they can let us know so that we can at least may enable the members themselves to be able to give those few schools that they find do not have, because we always make sure that their additions as backup so that we can deliver to schools that have interest. Chair, that's the major challenge. And what we said even last year was that it must be a pointer to our districts and our provinces that we're not equipping our schools to actually do what they need to do. It is extremely expensive. What we've tried to get money for, assisted by the presidency, is to make copies for grades 3 and 6. That's so, because that's where we will be analyzing and reporting to the country. But we're supplying the copies electronically to districts and supplying to the schools. At the moment, it's going to be very, it's not even, if you look at the numbers at metric level, they are nothing compared to what we're dealing with. And therefore, it's very difficult. It's money we don't have, but we make the copies available to the schools.
just a brief addition, and I think that there were some comments about the agency of teachers in all of this. And what we also need to report on is that with the teacher development summit that was held, there are a number of commitments and issues captured in the declaration. You know, yourselves, some of them were representatives represented there. But to link this also to our human resource development needs, because the HRD for South Africa also sits within the education sector to run with. And one of the points that came out of the discussion is around the skills audit amongst teachers to really begin to look at where best that resource should be placed. So when we're talking about all of the resources that are factored into making all of this possible, then that becomes another critical step to bear in mind as we develop further. So I think that would be also a useful space to watch in terms of the developments and to share developments around that with the portfolio committee.
We've only got 15 minutes, so let's just proceed. Those of you who have issues on page one. Okay, are we all together? Sorry, here's one. We need a report here. It's because you're sitting next to the department. They think you're on the other side. Thanks for coming. Thanks. Could I ask Vivian, you know, we keep on asking for additional information and so on. It would be nice when we do receive the information for you to send a cover note with that to say on such and such a date, the committee requests the following information herewith, please find XYZ. So that for our records, because I was just speaking to Mr. Brown that we've asked so many things and they're coming in drips and drabs. And we can't, yeah, thanks. Okay, can we do everybody work together on this drips and drabs? Page one. Doctor, yes, sure. Where's Mr. Bundy? This is stylistic. Mr. Brown? Why on earth do you have some bullets typed in bold and others? I think it's just the ones with the headings. Ah. Okay. Can we rectify that, please?
Yes, Jay, we can. But it just shows where the from the last version that we had, where we had made some changes.
Some changes. But the numbers. Did we add those numbers in or something? Is that why they're all bold?
Yeah.
It's possible. But look, okay, let's take that explanation. And in any case, in the next draft, all the bold will then disappear there, right? Except for maybe the headings. Okay, so members first page. None, nothing, nix. Page two. Okay, you'll see there that paragraph two has just been added there because I've asked them to put in people's names and so on. So you'll see there. Pardon. Yes?
We have two parliamentary liaison officers.
Where are you, Mr. Isma?
Page two.
Page two, yeah.
And Mr. Van den Heuvel. I just want to need clarity on that.
Mr. Van den Heuvel, parliamentary officer, yes?
Liaison officer and Mrs. Tumbaba. Miss Kasamba. The one working here with us in Parliament.
We'll
just add the one. The Mr. Van Heuvel is in the office of the minister, the ministry, whereas Mr. Kasamba is in the office of the teachers of the ministry. And one. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
We'll just add.
I think add a bracket so that we don't.
Yeah, in fact, they don't.
Which is in bold, just under challenges.
A very high bank return.
Yeah, now I think that sense it must be reconstructed without a very high bank return, because people will be reading this, especially in the house, and they it will open us for questions.
Why don't you make a suggestion?
With the payment of volunteers, with the payment of volunteers after a huge. A very high bank return rate of 52% is reported or experienced.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I think you must start with, you must say this. After a huge payment is made, not bank payment is made into
Yes.
For the payment of volunteers,
comma, 52%
is returned
because of
incorrect initials or incorrect match votes.
Well done, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And you must say thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Raymond. Going once, going twice, going three times, page 12. Same story applies to the semicolons and the bullets. Okay. From page 11 to 12 there, Mr. Van Meer.
and on page 12, Chair, the word leave, it must be lives, I'm sure. Department acknowledged that many teachers who teach in these schools do not live in the area or stay or reside and not leave.
9.4.1.
Yes.
Do not live in the area. I think I did. Okay. Page 13.
Thank you.
It says that this chief directory deals with the first bullet, says conditions of service related problem solving. And the second bullet as well refers to school governance and management related problem solving. No, we can still take out.
On page 17, the second bullet, I think we need just to change the sentences so that the conclusion that we arrived at is first and then the need to visit the provinces. So the level of support provided to schools, that is the concluding part of us. And then based on that, we said we need to visit the provinces. Yeah, make it just the second. No, make it the second part of the whole bullet. So the second sentence, which starts with the level of support, must come first. And then from that, we then decided to visit the provinces. So it's not a new. Yeah, the sentence. Yeah, same
sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, whilst I'm talking about support, I think it also became apparent that the support from national office to provinces was not all that good. At the meeting, Chair. No, remember when we discussed the first branch. To say yes in terms of administration, of education administration as a whole, they then focused only into NHO, the office there. They didn't take claim for what is happening in the provinces. But on the second branch, with regard to human resource management and that stuff, we could see there's a definite effort and a line between the departments.
No, but I think it's wrong to say that the administrative branch of the department must go to the provinces. It's just not true.
But that's only one case.
I think the point that you're making is an overarching point.
Yes.
Which goes to the point of the concurrent powers.
Yeah.
And whether there shouldn't be more synergies.
Yeah, no.
And that's a challenge. I mean, that's a challenge. And in some instances, the reason why that isn't the case is because provinces have been rather jealously guarding their territory, and likewise the department hasn't sufficiently imposed. So it's a mutual thing. And maybe that is something that...
So you then rule that it is not part of the report then?
It can't be part of what you're saying it should be. What I'm saying to you is that I don't deny that that was a challenge, which is in the overall scheme of things, which is why the president wants to meet MSCs and go to the education ministers council and so on, council for education ministers, at least twice a year. Why? Because the MSCs are not appointed by the government. They don't take a line of march from him. So he wants to go to those forums, just as he called the principals, for example. Because it's not the national department that has that direct line from the principals. They have to go through the process. Those are protocols that can make from our negotiated settings in our constitution, which allow for these powers to be the purview of the province. Now, it's not something that you and I sitting around the table are going to solve immediately. So, but to say it's not a challenge.